2, 1. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Monday. It's 1 o'clock, and it's time for Pirkei Avot, History and Hashkafa, sponsored by the Tel Aviv International Synagogue under the leadership of Rabbi Ariel Constantine. I want to apologize for missing last week's class. I finally got to me too. I came down with Corona, COVID. For those of you who use the general term, it was not a pleasant experience. I got no further than my bed for over almost a week, but thank God. Slowly, I will add though, from now my own experience, that those of you who have it or have had it, the symptoms last, especially fatigue, at least in my case, last longer, and you have to. I know it's a week before Pesach, or two weeks before Pesach, but still, you should take care of yourselves, and that way you'll have a much more successful and much more enjoyable holiday. We are now starting the third chapter. It's only taken us over almost 2 years, but we are starting the third chapter of Pirkei Avot. Lots to say here, and let's get started. The third chapter, begins with the following statement. Can't read my glasses. Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer. Akavya, the son of Mahalalel, was known to have said, or would want to say, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim. Look closely, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim. Three specific things or ideas or points of awareness. Via tabali de avera, and you'll never sin. Or it could be, via tabali de avera, you will be careful enough so as not to put yourself into compromising situations. Nobody is perfect. No one. Everybody sins. Errare humanum est, as the medievals used to say, that to err is human. Nevertheless, we're obligated to do our best not to put ourselves in situations which may end up being fraught with negative consequences. And hence, if you think about these things, he says, these things will be a very good tool to help you aware error and sin in the future. And what are they? Somewhat lugubrious, I have to warn you in advance. Dame ayin bata. Know from whence you come. Ula'ana taholech. And where are you going? Vilifnei mi ata atid liten bedin v'cheshbon. And before whom will you have to give a report? Whom will you, to whom will you have to fess up and describe? Din v'cheshbon is a report. Account. How, to whom will you have to give an accounting for your actions? Me'ayin bata, where have you come from? Mitipas rucha, from a, usually translated, putrid drop, meaning from a from one little teeny-weeny drop of semen, most of which ends up not, as we all know, right? So you all know there are billions of sperm cells in every single time that a person has relations, and only one of them wins the race. Some of them don't, and the rest go for naught. They're worthless. Ulana tahalech, where are you going? Lamakom afar rima betoleya. You're going to a place of dust and worms to different types of worms. In other words, we start from nothing. And we end up in the ground. There's no person. There's no person in the soul sperm cell until the sperm cell fertilizes the egg, and at the end, all that's left is a body which goes into the ground and decomposes and becomes no less. Which I don't want to say putrid, but you get the point. Than the beginning. So there's a as Mufasa used to say, the circle of life. Nevertheless, that's your body. Before whom are you going to be called to account? Lifnei Melech Malchei Hamlachim Hakadosh Baruch Hu, before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He, who is the, to say the opposite of the Rima V'Toleah and the Tipas Shucha would be understating the contrast. So there's a lot to unpack in this Mishnah, because it alludes to a lot of very, very, very important parts of the Jewish attitude towards life, and actually to attitudes that we should avoid. So let's get cracking. Histakel. Rather than do too much history, we will get to that. Histakel is a very interesting word. There is a number of different words in Hebrew for the use of the eyes, the use of vision. One is lirot, that's what everybody knows. I see. Ani roeh. Sometimes, by the way, the ani roeh also means I see, also means I understand, which is interesting how those two go together. In fact, it's quite striking that in Hebrew there are two of your senses actually can simultaneously mean the physical action that the whatever organ is does, and also mean understanding. Excuse me. Roeh means to understand. It also means to see, and shomea also means to hear, to use your ears, but also means to. It also means to understand. I rather suspect that the use of shomea is very, very, it's very, very common in the Talmud and elsewhere, because for a very long time, and in fact to a certain degree till today, there is a very, very clear prejudice in Judaism for oral, O-R, oral, well, oral to aural, O to A-U, now it's to oral presentations and to memorizing things and by knowing things by heart and not always depending on books. There's something of prejudice against books. Now, you can look around my library here, which is only part of what I've got, and I've got friends who've got a lot more than that. I was like, what do you mean, there's prejudice against books? There is a prejudice against books. It's always better to study from a live teacher who can be sure that you understand what he's trying to say or she's trying to say. And so the fact that I hear something can also mean I understand clearly comes out of that context where a student would say to his teacher, I understand, because I hear what you're saying. But we do that in English as well. Anyways, so one word is lirot, means to see. Okay. There's another word, means lahabit. Lahabit is... lahabit also can mean to look carefully. Tabit. If somebody wants to say, pay attention. Tabit. It's a little bit more intensive. But the most intensive word is lihistakel. Lihistakel is to stare, is to really contemplate. It's to really consider that which you're seeing. Now, so he's used, so Rav Kavya ben Hanan Mahalal here is using the most intensive verb for the use of the eyes, or for the use of one's understanding, that's clearly the issue here, in order to make his point. So he's by using the word listakel, he's underlining the importance of what he sees as what he's about to say. By the way, it's interesting, just in passing, I see Harold Lando points out that Jose, yes, there's a higher level, which means, of sight, which actually means seeing things beyond what you can actually see. A Jose is a type of, actually, of prophet, or seeing that which is about to happen. That's to see beyond the physical world, or to see that which is, to foresee the future. Like a chazai is a weatherman. Interestingly, one of the great Hasidic masters in the, I never remember the generations. I think in the third generation of Hasidus in Poland, I'm being careful because there are also Hasidut Ashkenaz, which is a whole other ballgame hundreds of years before, was called the Choyza of Lublin because he could see beyond the people who stood before him. In any event, I mentioned the word histakel. It's important. Interestingly, just as a side point, Chazal, in many Haredi and ultra Orthodox circles, it is commonly accepted that one should not look at women, and this has gotten to be an extreme business to the point where they don't even print pictures of women or stick figures of little girls, or if there are little videos with songs, there are little girls there because you're not supposed to see women. The truth of the matter is that is not. I mean, I think it's personally extreme. And to their credit, Lubavitch is the only group that does not do that. They make a point. The late Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, made a point of not excluding little girls from publications. But it's striking that it's based on a very strange reversal of the use of this word. The Talmud says that if you, let's give the following situation. Say as follows. I live in a neighborhood, and the woman who is the, she owns the local grocery store. Or she's the woman that man. She's the cashier. So if I go in to the store and I buy stuff, but I pay in small change, or I pay in small bills. It's not like today where you just throw down the credit card and the little thing reads the credit card and you leave. No, I'm going in. I want to buy a bag thing of milk, but I'm coming in with a bag full of pennies or a bag full of 10 agorot coins, and I'm going to pay for the milk, right? But what am I going to do? I'm going to give her one after another coin until I reach the amount that I owe. Why am I doing that? Because I absolutely think she's a stunningly beautiful woman, and I just want to look at her. I can't not. So the Gemara says, Hamaratzeh et hama'ot liyadav shel isha, if he pays that way to the hand of a woman, without even touching her, let's assume for a minute, in order, lihistakelba, in order to stare at her, even if he is full of Torah masim tovim, he's this big, it's strange to put the two together, he's this great scholar, and he's known as a righteous person, but he's just really taken with this woman, then even if he's as great as he's the biggest rabbi who ever lived, he will go straight to hell. What's the point of the Gemara? The Gemara is that you should not. There's no prohibition against seeing a person, seeing a woman. With people live in the same world. If you objectify her, if you use her in order to stare at her, that's what's wrong. That's what the Gemara says. That's the stakel is to contemplate, is to really to stare. Later on, those same Hasidei Ashkenaz, the German pietists that I mentioned before, with nothing to do with the Hasidim that we know today, changed all of those rules in a similar situation. Says Asur Lirot Nashim. They were so nervous about the ubiquitous nature of the evil of the sexual impulse of the Yitzhara that they said no, you shouldn't even see women. But that's absolutely not halacha. In any case, listakel. So in our context, Akavya ben Mahalal says histakel, contemplate deeply, really concentrate on three things, and you will never put yourself, or you will rarely put yourself into a situation where you sin. Okay, daim me'ayin bata, know from where you come. Now it's interesting. There are two versions of this phrase. One, this was pointed out by my friend Professor Zev Safrai in his commentary on Avot. Some versions of the Mishnah, and I'm looking at the earliest manuscript of the Mishnah. The earliest version of the Mishnah, the Kaufman manuscript, says, Da me'ayin bata, me'ayin aleph yud yud nun. There is a difference between me'ayin bata with one yud and me'ayin bata with two yuds. Me'ayin bata with one yud can mean where you come from. You know, what are your origins? Or it can mean from nothing. But if you have two yuds, it definitely means from nothing. You know, you come from nothing. You didn't exist before. You come from a physical process. And there wasn't a persona there. There was nothing there. And the earliest version has that one. And that would actually fit the context better, where you come from. In other words, realize your own limitations. And of course, realize your own mortality. You were born, and you were born of a physical process, and you're going to die. You came from a sperm cell, and when you die, your body, which you spent so much time taking care of, is going to go on the ground, and there'll be nothing left. What's the point? And what's that got to do with sin? So you can be very lugubrious about this statement. We'll get to God in a minute. You can be very lugubrious about this Mishnah if you want. In fact, we don't. It's interesting. Those of you who live in abroad. We don't use, do not hear this Mishnah very often. However, here in Israel, both Ashkenazim and Sephardim, or Mizrachim, recite this Mishnah at every single funeral. After the recitation of Psalms are completed, and after the eulogies are given. Then, when the procession goes towards the gravesite and it stops seven times and say Kaddish seven times on the way and so on and so forth, our customs here are somewhat different than what goes on in the United States. Well, not just in the United States, in the diaspora, in the exile. It starts off with the statement of Rabbi Akiva ben Mahalal al-Omer, describing that we're going to the cemetery and we're fulfilling as if the observation of Akiva ben Mahalal, the person who passed away, is going to end up in the in the ground. Interestingly, and it requires a different separate conversation. The words tipas rucha, a putrid drop, or the sperm cell, is said under, is not recited out loud, but under sort of like a lower tone. I'm assuming because you don't want to totally unnerve the mourners. I mean, that's my take on it. In any event, so this is heavily, you know, depressing. Why is he doing this? What's got to do with sin? So it's funny. There's almost a single-mindedness about the. Interpretation of this Mishnah, if you go through most of the major commentaries, and they all say more or less work in the same direction. That if you realize the temporary nature of life, and you realize that we all start out the same way, and we all end up in the same place. I have a relative who once told another relative who was something of a thief, reminding that there are no pockets and shrouds. That you know, you don't take it, you can't take it with you. In fact, it's interesting. There is I once saw a bumper sticker that said, I don't remember what it was, I think it was in New York, that said, the one who gets the most, the one who has the most toys and then dies wins. Well, that's the exact opposite of this Mishnah. It's very, very heavy. I think that the point here is something a little bit different, and I think that's what connects to Yetzah Bali De Avera. You don't come to sinning. Of late, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Of late, my friend Rabbi Meni Steinsaltz, who's the son of Rav Adin Steinsaltz at Zal, has been sending me his father's unpublished commentaries Oh, they're not then unedited commentaries on the comments on the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Balei Tanya on Chumash. It's called Likutei Torah, Torah Or. And the passages that he quotes from the Likutei Torah are about 2 pages long, and each booklet is about 28 pages long. So you can tell that it's like 80% Steinsaltz and 20% Schneerson. In any event, there is in one of these recently, I at the moment don't remember which one. He made the following comment. He said, you know, we have different types of awareness in our lives. We have passive awareness and we have active awareness. There are things of which we're aware without thinking about them. We breathe. We eat. We know that today's April 4th. So another 11 days, you guys are going to have to pay your taxes. Those in America, I get another 2 months. We have an automatic extension. But we don't organize our lives around them. In the context that Rabbi Steinsaltz mentions it, is that we are people who are people of faith, believe in the existence of God. There are two ways you can do that. You can believe in God passively. You know, he's there. I know he's there. I don't really think about him a lot. I mean, it's sort of like it's a given. It's a default. Let's call it a default position. And if you act like that, that's certainly a way to live. But if your awareness of God is a default position, then it's easy to forget. It's really striking. The Torah, on many, many occasions, has a prohibition against forgetting God. How do you forget God? Well, if your default is sort of like, I know he's there, but I don't think about it so often, you can forget for a while. And actually, truth is, you know, it's to get to a situation where you're constantly aware of God is that's a lot, and requires a very, you know, high level of spirituality. Nevertheless, says Rabbi Steinsaltz, he says that's not what we should aim for. And here he quotes the Alter Rebbe. You shouldn't, your awareness of God should go from being passive to being active. It should be a much more normative and formative part of your awareness than anything else. And he gives the example of death. He says, every one of us knows, and that's why it connects to this Mishnah. Every one of us knows that we're mortal. We all know that. Sometimes we fight against it. Sometimes we don't fight against it. Sometimes we just take it for granted. We do that a lot. But that's it. What would happen if our awareness of our mortality were not to just be sort of something I'm aware of way in the back of my head, but one of the things of which I'm always aware, not to the extent that I'm saying, why should I bother doing anything, I'm going to die, but rather to be aware of the limited amount of time we have on earth, and that we will have to make an accounting of ourselves and of our lives. Won't that change your priorities? Won't that bring you to make choices that are much more constructive? I think that's what Rav Akavya ben Mahalal is saying. It's in Yetabali de Avera. Of course you're going to sin. Everybody sins. But you'll make choices and saying, is this what I want to be doing now? Now, in all candor, I'll be on a personal note. So as I get to my point in my career where I'm switching careers, I'm leaving the university after 30 years next year, no, the year after, actually. And, you know, hopefully with good health, I hope to be able to do all kinds of other things. But you really have to decide, you know, what am I going to do and what am I not going to do? What's more important and what's not more important? Now, I have friends who are thrilled with the possibility of not having to teach anymore. I can't imagine not teaching. I'm probably going to teach more than I do now. who are thrilled with the possibility of not teaching because they're going to teach more. They're going to teach more. They're going to write more academic books. And that's fine because that's what they wanted. That's what they think they were putting the earth on this earth for. I'm less. You know, I struggle with this. You know. What are you supposed to do when you make your accounting of the time that you were given? I'm not so sure that that's the for me the situation. And as you get older, of course, your awareness of mortality increases. But that's, I think, the reason why you should learn Pirkei Avot early on, because you should maximize your time and use it the best way. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy life. You're supposed to enjoy life. The Rambam says that you should enjoy life, but always remember that everything should be dedicated to the service of God. So something similar over here as well. So if that's so, in light of all of that, I think that's what the... That's what Akavya ben Mahalal is trying to say here. Carefully consider the more important realities of your life in order to make the proper, formative, constructive, and long-lived decisions. Because ultimately, you're going to have to make accounting before God for the biggest gift that you were ever given, which is life. And this is where you make it. You make your place in Olam Haba, which is forever. Kacha, this way. And by the way, that also, believe it or not, affects Pesach. Why is it got to do with Pesach? Because the implication I think that I gave throughout the talk today is that you use your time. You might use your time frivolously. You know, I mean, I don't know. Did I need to see Star Wars number three? You know, the first one. Did I need to see it 25 times? Probably not. I probably could have been better, much better off. But it's not just that. Realizing one's own limitations is applicable for the observance of mitzvot as well. You can sit there and be full of yourself and say, oh, I'm going to be machmir on this on Pesach, and I'm not going to eat this, and I'm going to make my family miserable because they didn't check all of the light sockets and all kinds of other things. And you can actually forget yourself in the midst of all of the tension around Pesach. Probably ruin the Chag because you create such a bad atmosphere. But beyond that, the physical things that you do are critical. You have to keep all the halachot, and you have to create a Pesach kil chato. No compromises there. But nevertheless, the accounting that you're going to make for the mitzvot that you're going to perform are before Melech Malchei Amloch and Makadosh Baruch Hu. So that this is not just an ethical admonition. It's also a religious, halachic admonition. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal used to use the word halacha, law, both for the emotional side as well as the practical side of observance of mitzvot. And what he meant by that, I remember David Hartman would scream and yelled at me that the Rav was overly legalistic, but I despite the fact he was a genius and knew the Rav well when he was younger, and I knew the Rav when he was older, nevertheless, I think he missed the point. What the Rav meant by saying that that being spiritual and being sensitive and being God-aware and doing things in the way, in a sense which is the most, in a way, in a manner, which is the most humane, that's as binding as doing things technically properly. And one needs the other. So, we have 2 weeks till Pesach. And remember who the accounting is to. First of all, it's to whoever's in charge of cleaning the house, whether it's the husband, the wife, or whatever. And the second, and the overall is the Baal HaBayit. So we will see you next time. I will bli neder. There will be a shiur next time, and we will talk more about Pesach, and see you then. Have a good week.